Hello and welcome to Season 9, Episode 3 of the Ubuntu Podcast. It's Tuesday the 15th of March and we're going to discuss what's been happening in the news and Ubuntu community plus some events. I'm Mark and joining me this week are Alan.
Hello.
Laura.
Hiya.
And Martin.
Hello.
So Alan, what have you been up to since last time?
I got one of them their Raspberry Pi 3 things, and I've been playing with it because I wanted to try out Snappy, and it turns out that our Snappy image currently is Raspberry Pi 2 and doesn't work on the Raspberry Pi 3. So I stopped playing.
Did you fix it?
No, I continued to play with Snappy on the Raspberry Pi 2 anyway because I still needed to, and I decided to focus my attention both on Snappy on the Pi 2, and I managed to get ScumVM working on
brilliant.
Ubuntu phone.
So did you play Beneath a Steel Sky?
Yes, and I've been playing around with it to try and get it working, but there's some problems with Mir, so it didn't quite work. So I was using the Pi to build the ARM build of ScumVM so that I could put that binary on Ubuntu phone and run it under SDL2 under Mir. And yeah, it almost works. It launches and you get all the audio and the video. The video starts at the beginning. They're like cutscenes. And then the game plays. And then there's a few tweaks I need to do. But it's getting there. And the ultimate goal is to play loads of, like, you know, interactive.
Monkey Island.
Yeah, those kind of things. Monkey Island, like Leisure Suit Larry, all of
Indiana
those.
Indiana Jones.
Yes, all of them. Yeah.
Well, when you get it all working, you'll be pleased to hear I have the original boxes of all of the games that run on ScumVM. So you can have a lend if you like.
Ooh, good man. I'll probably do the right thing and buy them all on good old games, GOG or
something.
Yeah,
I bought the box sets off eBay years ago.
Awesome.
Laura, what have you been doing?
Nothing especially technical, but I went to watch Lawrence of Arabia at the cinema on Sunday, and I feel that's an achievement in itself.
What, because it's so long?
Yes. It was, I think, 3.5 hours long.
Yeah.
Wow.
No, 3 hours 40, something like that. Yeah, it had an intermission. But by that point, we felt that we'd given so much of our life to it that we just would carry on because we will never watch it again.
Have you never seen it before?
No.
Ah. It's one of those. I've got it on DVD. You can borrow it to watch it again sometime if you really want to.
No, that's all right.
I remember watching Dr. Zhivago on holiday in Spain, Fuerteventura it was, with my wife's father when everyone else was in bed. And yeah, that was very, very, very long. I love those films. They're just fantastic.
I've never seen that either, actually.
Oh, you totally should. It's a brilliant film. Yeah. Brilliant film.
So yeah, that's what I've done.
Excellent. Well, let's get on with the show.
And now it's time for some news. And first up this week is that Microsoft is something of a Jekyll and Hyde figure within the open source world.
So what have they been doing? Have they been good to us?
Well, this is where the Jekyll and Hyde analogy comes from. So the big news is the thing that got a lot of attention in the last week is that they've released Microsoft SQL Server for Linux, or will be releasing Microsoft SQL Server for Linux.
So is that a new cod base or?
Well, I think it remains to be seen what it is. I think that the intention to release it has been announced rather than an actual, you know, full-blooded product.
Okay.
But the origins of Microsoft SQL Server are Sybase SQL Server from sort of way back in the late 90s, and that did run on, you know, Sun OS and, you know, HPUX and AIX and things like that. But I'm sure all of that kind of stuff has long since been axed from the Microsoft code. So
actually,
they'll be sort of,
it's funny you should mention
retrofitting some of that.
I've seen a lot of people like decry the Microsoft releasing SQL Server, saying, "Yeah, well, it used to run on, you know, Unix systems, and you know this is no great achievement because the original Sybase codebase did run on Unix." I remember distinctly going to Microsoft's HQ in Reading, or their research center, or whatever it is, many years ago, I think, when SQL Server 7 came out. And I distinctly remember their product manager being on stage saying that they had pizzas and Coke when, during the lifetime of SQL Server 7, they got rid of the last remnants of the Sybase code base. So I do not believe that there is still this remnant of all the Sybase stuff in there, given that was like 10 plus years ago that I heard them say that. I think it's, I mean, it's nice. It's not targeted at us, obviously. It's to try and get Oracle people to use SQL Server instead of Oracle.
Yeah.
Yes.
And in other news, Microsoft have acquired Xamarin, who are the team originally behind Mono, and now their tools are predominantly used for doing sort of cross-platform mobile application development, but I think it's quite popular amongst game developers. I could be wrong about that.
Yeah, I think it's popular among people who want to make cross-platform apps that have a consistent look and feel with the platform on, you know, on, like, I say cross-platform, iOS and Android.
But I suppose now that they're all about opensourcing.net, having the people who've written an opensource.net probably be quite handy.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't think this was surprising to anyone that Xamarin were bought by Microsoft, because they're closely allied with Microsoft, and Microsoft were always involved in all of their events and so on. So this is not really a surprise.
I think Miguel de Casas would probably be quite pleased to be working with or for Microsoft, whatever the arrangement is, because if you look back through the history of GNOME, where he was one of the, you know, project originators, the original GNOME, the network object model, he was inspired by the component technology that he saw when he was at Microsoft, and how all of these different components talk to one another, and that was the architecture that he was effectively recreating to create GNOME. So in some respects, he's sort of in his spiritual home now, I suppose.
So is that the Jekyll part or is that the Hyde part? I'm not quite sure. What's the other side of it?
Yeah, they're continuing to do business and make money. And one of the ways they do that is to extract patent royalties from Android and Linux companies. So
they're doing that equally with any other company too, surely.
How do you mean equally?
Well, they're extracting patent royalties, but they're not specifically going after Android and Linux companies versus any other company. I
imagine not. I think that Microsoft licensing has a whole army of people that do this stuff, and I think it just plays well to juxtapose their endeavours in, not necessarily with open source, but in the open source context. Some people have sort of gravitated towards this, but they're still, you know, making money, because that's what Microsoft, you know, does. And apparently there's been a lockdown in the Windows App Store and the game ecosystems as well, with the new Universal Windows platform. So whilst one part of the company sort of looking at this, you know, open platform on which to base its products, there's another part who's, you know, creating a walled garden and locking their customers into an ecosystem.
What's the Universal Windows platform?
So it's like it's Microsoft doing the same kind of thing that Android that Apple do with their App Store. It's like all your apps have to go through them. So at the moment, Windows, forgive me for using this word, Windows is quite an open development platform. Anyone can like create an app, stick it online, and their consumers can download the app without having to go through some other gatekeeper. Whereas with Apple on iOS, you have to go through Apple, and Microsoft are trying to do that with the Universal Windows platform. So game developers will have to have their apps go through the Universal Windows platform to get to Windows customers.
Okay.
That's their proposal anyway.
The last thing that they're doing is they're filing patents for their phone pad and Continuum, which is a lot like the convergent story from Ubuntu, and a bit like the thing from Apple, whatever Apple's handoff is it called, or something like that. And so there's a concern brewing as to how Microsoft may wield this patent if they get it in the future.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so moving on from lunatic Microsoft news, is there anything else in the news?
Yes. So Dell has launched its fifth generation Project Sputnik laptops that run Ubuntu.
Woohoo! Awesome. So that is good news.
Yes, I have the second generation, I think.
I thought you were going to say, I have placed an order.
No, not right now.
I'm tempted to.
Yeah.
You surprise me.
Alan buying buys two, new Alan. Gadget news.
Well, no, the perennial undercurrent to, you know, talking to Alan over the last couple of years is I really need to replace this laptop. So, yes.
Yeah. Of all the things that Alan just buys new, laptops tend not to be one of them.
Like, I do keep laptops quite a long time.
Exactly, that's my point. And you and keep them for donkey's years.
Yeah, I deliberate for ages over laptops. I'll go and buy like two Raspberry Pis.
Buy the same one again.
Well, no, I've never bought the same laptop twice in a row. Never.
That's because they've stopped making them by the time he gets around.
Yeah, because the company shut down by the time I come around to buy another one. So what's new about this new Dell? What's good about it?
So it's got sixth generation Intel Skylake processor.
That's new.
Which sounds good. I don't really follow processors anymore. 13-inch XPS 13 and 15 to 17-inch Precision Line.
Oh, so they all come with Linux. Right. Cool.
Yeah. Did the 15 and 17 not do previously?
Well, like some of them did. Yeah, some.
But there's like a whole range of precision laptops rather than, I think the last generation just had one or maybe two.
Right.
Right.
This has got four or five different ones of varying sizes.
Okay. And so it says the screens come with full HD, quad HD and 4K resolution, presumably nice. Depending on the size.
Yeah, I think, and different options for different models.
It's nice. I love the fact that they're still doing this. Like it's clearly, you know, yeah.
Given, and expanding the range.
And Barton like blogged about the fact that this whole thing started with a 40K investment from some inside Dell fund that you get for internal projects. And that it's now what, the fifth generation. So they've done, this is the fifth one they've done. So it can't be that unsuccessful. I know people bitch and moan about, you know, flaws in the Dell and how it's not a ThinkPad and it's not a MacBook Pro, but there must be enough people buying these developer laptops that make it worth them continuing to do it.
Well, the only thing that I could really complain about once I got the software working on mine is that the beautiful screen doesn't seem to I've got a dead pixel in it and it gets this white smeary effect, and I've had it replaced once already. But I would expect that the new screens don't do that.
You would hope not.
Yeah, well, exactly. We're now, three generations on from there. And cool. I think I know someone else who hasn't had that problem.
Awesome. Mark, security news.
1 million free TLS certificates have now been issued by Let's Encrypt over the 3 months since it's launched.
How many of those do you think have been or are coming up for the renewal? Because isn't it after 3 months you have to renew it? Because yes. It only lasts for 3 months.
Well, yeah. So I registered mine basically when it launched publicly. And when I did, I set up a cron job. Because what they said was they last for 3 months, they expect people to renew them around the 2 month mark. So I thought, right, well, I'll set it with a cron job that gets me a new certificate every 2 months. And last week I received an email saying, by the way, do you know your certificate's about to expire? Yeah. And I went and checked and it had renewed itself.
Oh, I thought you were going to say, and my cron job wasn't working. I just wonder how many other people are going to be renewing theirs auto magically, or whether they just did the minimum viable product of getting it, you know, just working.
Yeah, see if it worked away. Kind of thing, yeah.
So what's the reason for making you renew so frequently?
I think it's basically because it's it's all automated kind of verification, so it's not as well, potentially not as as verified as some other people might say, like who you'd pay money for. So I suppose it's because it's free, you don't get it for as long. I don't know. But apparently, well, they said that 3 months is the most common period for a certificate on the internet based on their research. So apparently it's not unusual. I don't know.
Well, it's good news. I'm super impressed that they had so many people use them and implement it. I did on one of my projects. I ran the script and it just worked. I installed Mattermost on a DigitalOcean droplet and just thought, I know, I'll do a Let's Encrypt SSL certificate and just ran the commands, just copy and pasting them, and it just worked. So, yeah, I should expect to get an email sometime soon.
And they reckon...
Oh, sorry. Carry on.
2.5 million new domains have been covered by HTTPS.
Wow.
Which is surely a good thing.
Yeah, totally.
And they reckon 90% of them weren't covered by HTTPS before.
Cool.
It's been a very cool. successful project, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Long may it continue. In not so good news, Ubuntu 16.04, which releases in just over a month, is dropping AMD FGLRX drivers. Oh no, disaster. What are Canonical thinking?
Or to put it another way, AMD aren't supporting Ubuntu 16.04 LTS with the FGLRX driver.
You have to spin it that way, don't you? It was much easier when we could have a go at Canonical.
I don't have to spin it that way, but you know, the guy from AMD's open source team might have spun it that way when he explained what was going on.
Oh, good.
I mean, Pharonix might want to spin it in a more sensational way, but I couldn't possibly comment.
I think you'd be right.
Yeah, a few people. I think that's the thing. People didn't understand that the reason why it was dropped was because it didn't support the version of X that's in 16.04. And so it just physically can't be shipped in 16.04. The only other option is for us to hold back the version of X in 16.04. So users end up with an older version.
Or wait until AMD release their drivers.
We could make it 16.06 or 16.08 or just like bump it to 16.10. Yes, we should do that.
Yes.
It's part of the problem of having time-based releases, really, isn't it?
And the other issue is that, you know, other distributions have long since dropped the Catalyst drivers from the official repositories because they're just always behind and a pain to integrate. So Ubuntu really aren't doing anything different here. They're just finally admitting they can't go through this pain continually. And there is a better solution on the horizon. So they're planning for a bright new future rather than, you know, looking back at what is actually almost end of life product.
Right. Speaking of display servers, Martin, Fedora has some news.
Yeah, so the Fedora Workstation Working Group have decided that they're still not quite ready for Wayland.
Oh, this takes me back. Now, you remember in our predictions episode last year,
I do.
when I predicted something about Wayland and you all jumped on me and said Fedora is already shipping with Wayland by default, and I said it hasn't happened yet.
Yes. I ate a large slice of humble pie earlier this afternoon, Mark.
In anticipation.
When I saw this go into the show notes, I thought, yes, I was wrong. Mark was right. specifically, this is with Fedora 24 coming up. They're stepping back from shipping Wayland by default. So I do believe Wayland's still going to be in there, and it's something that you can use, but it's not going to be the default display server.
Yeah, and they say it will be the best Wayland session they've ever had. It just isn't ready to replace X yet.
Right,
it's been getting better and better each iteration.
Yeah, there's certain features they know it can't currently do, and for those, you just boot using X. That's fine. They're both there. You can still use X Windows if you want to. That's right, isn't it?
So why would you go to Wayland?
It's the future, Laura. Come on, embrace the future.
This is a bit like the ZFS discussion, Laura. It's the new hotness.
It was the new hotness about 4 years ago, to be fair.
Yeah, it's a bit lukewarm now.
The specific points they make are that apps are isolated from each other, so they can't spy on each other as they apparently can in X. There's a lot of old baggage in the X protocol, which we apparently don't need anymore, and Wayland is more extensible, so you can add stuff to it.
It's good. I'm glad that they're waiting until it's like, you know, solid before they shove it in the release, because you wouldn't want, you know, you wouldn't want to put something that was unfinished in a release. So it's a sensible thing to do.
It's a bummer when your graphics go.
Yeah. Mark, finally, we've got some ARM-related news.
Yes. Lenovo have announced a rollout of an ARM-based developer cloud.
I signed up.
ARM's in the cloud.
I signed up. I want to build my stuff in the cloud. I don't want to have a Raspberry Pi on my desk. I want to have an ARM thing in the cloud that builds all my stuff for me. So when I build my next scum VM, I don't have a little flashing light blinking at me on my desk.
But that's basically what this is about, isn't it? This is providing an ARM V8 environment, which people can spin up and build their stuff, which will run on ARM platforms, so they don't have to have an ARM build farm of Raspberry Pis daisy chained together on their desk.
Yeah, great idea.
Where's the fun in
that? Yeah.
And there was another little bit of ARM news as well, also from Lenaro.
Oh, yes. And John Stolch, I probably pronounced that wrong, at Lenaro Connect has demonstrated a Nexus 7 2013 running a mainline Linux kernel with about 50 patches. So this was, there was quite a bit of controversy, I seem to remember, around there not being a proper open source kernel running on this this Nexus 7. Something to do with graphics drivers and so on.
It's the same with most of these ARM devices. They all, a lot of them have binary blobs. So
after only 3 years, we now have a mainline kernel.
Yeah, it's progress, and that I think that's great. And that's exactly what Lenaro are there for, is to mainline these kind of things, so that, you know, as we go down the line, newer devices that come out could potentially, if they're based on the same kind of SoC, could have free software out of the box. And so you don't need all these horrible binary blobs like you get on a Raspberry Pi and other devices. It's great. Fantastic.
Cool. Excellent. And that's all the news.
And now for some community news and events.
We do have events this time.
We do. So first of all, there's a call, I think, gone out to make GNOME software, or just software, beautiful.
Yes. It's from Mike Hall, one of my co-workers. He posted a blog post about... we mentioned some time ago that Ubuntu Software Center is going to be removed in 1604 from the default install. In fact, it already has been. If you install 1604 today, you won't get Ubuntu Software Center by default. You'll get GNOME software, the upstream GNOME package software manager thing that lets you search for applications and install them. And one of the things that GNOME software needs is metadata about applications. You know, it's all very good having all these thousands of applications in the archive, but what people like to do is scroll through seeing nice pretty icons and screenshots and, you know, and text, like accurate text descriptions of the application. And Mike has put out a call for people to contribute in a way that's like super easy and doesn't require developer access to anything. It's a nice, easy, lightweight way to contribute to make Ubuntu 16.04 better, and it contributes to upstream as well, so it's not just Ubuntu that benefits from this.
Cool. Excellent.
Yes.
And yes.
Stefan Graeber says LXC, LXD, and LXCFS 2.0 final releases are getting closer. That's really exciting. What are they?
Containers and stuff.
Yeah, linuxcontainers.org is the place to find out all about this kind of stuff. Stefan Graeber, he works for...
Slash get involved?
Yes, probably. Stefan works for Canonical and works on LXC, LXD, or LexC, LexD, depending on who you speak to, how you pronounce that. And it's really, really lightweight containers. So you can very quickly and easily spin up multiple, like, kind of like virtual machines on your machine. So, for example, I wanted to spin up a Ubuntu 16.04 container so that I could run some applications that only work on 16.04, but my laptop's running 14.04. And LexD and LexD allow you to do that really simply and easily, and really easy manage it and SSH into the thing and manage it really nicely. And it's got a REST API and all that. But the reason why I put the link in there is because he's doing, as Stefan does quite often, a series of blog posts. And the first one he's published, which was this one, and there's a series of 12 of them yet to be published. He's only published the first one so far. But they often go into a lot of detail, and they get a lot of good feedback and good response from developers and users alike. So I thought I'd put a link in there because they're really quite good and they're well written.
Cool. So apparently Ubuntu documentation has written the longest email ever.
Requesting for Ubuntu documentation leadership.
Mm. Yes.
So who leads Ubuntu documentation at the moment?
Well, that's the reason why this mail was sent, really, is there isn't really any leadership. Like, some time ago, there was the doc team had people leading the team, and that's, you know, people have moved on to other projects or, you know, doing other things or just left the project or whatever. And the mail was really a call out to say, look, we need some leadership, some people who can drive the project forward, because otherwise our documentation is just going to sit there and rot, which some of it has over the years and hasn't been updated, and we don't have like people responsible for getting this stuff fixed, whereas we have people responsible for the archive and people responsible for, you know, the NTP server and other people responsible for other parts of the community. There's no one really responsible for that, and so the call was put out for people to help out there.
So is the Ubuntu documentation entirely community maintained?
Well, arguably everything in Ubuntu is arguably community maintained.
Really, but you pay developers to do some stuff,
right? But they're part of the community. There's,
well, yes. You know, okay. Are there any?
I've got a real pedantic head on today. I'm sorry.
You have, haven't you?
Are there any canonical employees?
Yes, who are paid to work on the documentation?
Not that I'm aware of. Well, actually, that's not true. Yes, is the right answer. There are, but it's a very small number of people who work on a small subset of documentation, like please write this guide or please write this how-to or please write the documentation for this specific project. There isn't anyone who runs the documentation team, as it were. And I think that's partly why the mail was sent, is because we're missing that kind of leadership who can identify where the documentation is lacking, what the requirements are, and drive that forward. And we haven't had that for a while. So that's really what we need. And I think the idea is that we'll formulate a plan of what we're going to do about this and find someone to lead the team, because it's otherwise it's just going to be orphaned.
Cool. So on the back of last week's news about Ubuntu Touch being ported to other phones, for community ported, it's now being ported to Sony Xperia T2 Ultra Android phones.
This is
I'm
good.
Not sure I know what they are.
No, it's another Sony phone, another phone, which is great.
Yeah.
It's cool. Interesting. I didn't realise that the Sony kit was so... I'm using the... it's port as a word, it's open, you know, that people could hack it in this way.
Yeah, when I went to a XDA DevCon in Manchester last year, maybe the year before, and there were two companies there who were making a big deal about the fact that they were being more open than they were in the past. One was MediaTek, which happens to be the company that make the chips that are inside the BQ phones and the Meizu phones. And the other company that we're talking about being open is Sony, and how they were making... Wow. Their stuff available based on AOSP, so that it was easier to make ROMs for Sony devices, which appeals to the XDA developer type community who like to make ROMs for phones and stuff.
That's amazing, because I always associate Sony with absolutely, you know, proprietary single company solutions, you know, and vendor lock-in. So it's really good to hear that, you know, maybe in this open world that's, you know, starting to emerge, that some of these companies are changing attitudes. It's good.
Yeah.
That's especially good, because I may have mentioned this before, but I love my Xperia Z phone.
Yeah. I'm torn with Sony, because I love the hardware that they make. They make some really, really nice stuff from, like, right across the board, from video cameras, like DVRs, TVs, their laptops. They look nice, but often can be a bit plasticky. And their phones are often beautiful, comparable with, you know, the style that you get on an Apple device or a high-end and any other high-end Android device. I love Sony stuff, but I was always torn with the whole proprietariness of, you know, what was their card called? Was it called
Media Stick Pro?
the blue memory stick, that's the one, and the magic gate and all that nonsense. And but I've loved Sony stuff for such a long time, and then being more open, it just makes me love them even more.
Oh, they're all SD now anyway, I think.
In fact, that news article on Softpedia that I linked to only came about because someone dropped by the Ubuntu Touch IRC channel and just posted an Imgur link, which was a photo of a Sony Xperia T2 running Ubuntu. And I went, oh, that's cool. Who's that? And he said, oh, that's mine. I'm doing the port. And I said, oh, that's great. Fantastic. And I posted the image online and said, look, someone's doing a port for this. And then suddenly there's a news article just based on one image that one person has made of a photo of a phone. It's like, yes, there's going to be a port. So, yeah, we latch onto these things and, like, share them wide. Yes, that's the end of the community news, I think.
So as,
we have some events.
Yeah, we have three events listed this week, which is three more than last time.
Well, one of them is not an event, to be fair.
Yeah, that's true. So there's Mark posted a blog post up on the OddCamp website to say that basically we're all really busy. And much as we'd like to go to OddCamp, nobody's got time to organise it this year.
Tell us more, Mark.
Well, more than that, though.
Yes.
Just because we're not organising it doesn't mean that someone else can't organise it. So we've had a few people get in touch and say they're interested in helping out. Mm-hmm. If you've got something in mind, if you think you know a good venue for OddCamp and you'd be willing to do some of the arranging to help it happen, then we'll have a link in the show notes with the details to get in touch with us.
Yeah.
And let us know, because we love OddCamp and we don't want not to go to it.
Yes. And we can give all the specs of the rooms, like the sort of numbers it needs to hold and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's mainly having a venue that's big enough and suitable enough and somebody nearby who can organise it.
Yeah.
In happier news, though, a new event has been announced, put together by a friend of the show, Joe Ressington. It's called Foss Talk Live. And it's going to be an evening of live podcasting taking place in London on Saturday the 6th of August, so later this year. Tickets are free, but they're in short supply. There's not very many of them, so it's strictly first come, first serve. So if you're interested in coming along to that, get your tickets fast. And Linux Voice will be there. The Linux Luddites will be there. We will be there. And I think Stuart Langridge and Dave Mega Slippers from Geek News Radio will be there as well.
Yes. And when we say tickets are limited, we don't mean like with OddCamp where we only release a few tickets at first. And then when they sell out, we say, oh, look, there's more tickets. This is actually like the room isn't very big. We're just doing this to see if it's the kind of thing people are interested in. So if you are interested, really do get a ticket sooner rather than later.
It should be fun.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Definitely.
And one more. Where's this?
We have the DjangoCon in Europe in Budapest in Hungary.
When's that?
And that's end of March, so the 30th of March until the 3rd of April.
Cool.
And where can you find out more?
DjangoCon.eu.
Awesome. Is that all the events?
Yeah.
Awesome. Yep. Thank you.
We love getting your feedback, so please send it to us. Even the pointlessly mean stuff makes us laugh. If it's short, tweet us on @UbuntuPodcast. If it's less short, but please no essays, email us on show@UbuntuPodcast.org. If you'd like to discuss some of the things we talk about with other listeners, post on our shiny new subreddit at reddit.com/r/UbuntuPodcast. Or you can just leave a comment on the relevant show notes on our website, UbuntuPodcast.org.
That's all for episode 3. We'll be back next week when we'll be interviewing Catherine Jones from the Science Museum and bring you some command line love and, of course, go over your feedback.
Awesome.
Cool. I was about to say, that sounds like a fun-packed show, but that seems inappropriate at the end of this one.
There's a little smiley face just appeared at the end of the show notes, and so I'm a bit like, how do we vocalise that?
I'm sure that's coming
just
across.
Just grin.
That's coming across.
I'm smiling.
Smile
can
you while
see?
You talk. Yes. Excellent. We'll see you all next week.
All right, then.
Bye.
See you next
Bye.
Week.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
stop recording.